station.
Congress Sky News Centre at 5. The Tories are claiming that Labour's sums don't add up after the Shadow Home Secretary said 10,000 new police officers would cost £300,000. Diane Abbott later corrected herself, saying she'd misspoke in a radio interview. Party leader Jeremy Corbyn says a proper costing has been carried out.
It will be paid for by not going ahead with the cuts in capital gains tax. We've corrected the figure and it will be absolutely clear now, today and in the manifesto. I'm not embarrassed in the slightest.
A self-taught online terrorist has been jailed for 8 years after distributing step-by-step training guides around the world. Samata Ullah hid videos on how to avoid being found out on USB sticks disguised as cufflinks. 300 jobs are being created in a £100 million deal to sell part of Tata Steel's operation in the UK. Liberty House has formally completed its acquisition of the business it bought from the Indian firm earlier this year. Some IVF clinics are said to be offering women free treatment in exchange for half their eggs. The Daily Mail carried out an undercover investigation and found the eggs are then sold to couples for thousands of pounds. Proposals to scrap athletics world records set before 2005 are attracting criticism, with Britain's marathon world record holder Paula Radcliffe saying it's cowardly. 2005 has been picked out because blood samples weren't kept before then. But Piers O'Callaghan, head of a European Athletics Task Force, says other sports have been through something similar.
The Five Nations changed into the Six Nations in the year 2000, and all those records were changed. If you go back to the early 90s, the European Cup transferred into the Champions League, and all those records are recalibrated. The IAAF and European Athletics have to take desperate measures to regain the public trust.
And a surfer who survived more than 30 hours stranded at sea says his rescuers are his heroes. 22-year-old Matthew Bryce from Glasgow was found by a search and rescue helicopter last night after going out on his board on Sunday morning. That's the latest. I'm Andy Hayes. You are my...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first ever Making a Researcher. For the next 30 minutes, we're going to talk about interesting research projects here on the campus. And my name is Rowling. We have the lovely, brilliant Yelena O'Reilly as our first guest of the show. Do you want to say hi, Yelena?
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Okay, right. So we're going to start the talk show with your research topic. So can you briefly describe your research title for me, please?
I'm investigating how people acquire a second language, and more precisely, I'm investigating how people acquire grammatical structures that do not exist in their native language.
Ah, right. Okay. Can you give a brief example of the grammatical structures?
So one of the main examples I'm using is the English article system. So for example, whether you say this is a cat or this is the cat, articles are a feature that don't exist in the majority of world's languages, which means that there's a huge number of non-native speakers who are learning English who actually struggle with acquiring the article system.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But by the way, what's your first language?
My first language is Croatian.
Right, okay. Yeah. Articles doesn't really exist in Chinese as well.
Yeah, so Croatian is it's a member of a group called Slavic languages. Right. And all Slavic languages, so including Czech, Slovakian, Russian, and so on, including Croatian, they don't have any articles.
Right, so in your language, you just say, here's cat.
Yeah,
instead exactly. of here is yeah. a cat. Right, yeah. Okay. Why the articles? Is that a particular fascination of yours?
Oh, so why have I chosen to focus on articles?
Yes.
Well, I used to be, before I came to York, I used to be an English teacher, and I used to teach adults for about 7 years. And I noticed that even when they were really high proficiency, they would still omit articles or get articles wrong. And I just became interested as to why that was. Mm. So I started reading more about that, and then I decided to do a PhD on it.
Oh, right. Brave choice. Not many people. Some people just Wikipedia or Google it, but you decided to do a PhD. Great. And are you in your, which year are you in?
So I'm in my third year, which right. hopefully will be my final year.
Yes, yes, here's the hope. We all hope we are going to finish before the end of third year. And who's your supervisor? Can you tell us a bit more about the supervisor?
Yes, so I'm in the Department of Education, and my supervisor is Daniela Trenkic, and she's a researcher who has done majority of her work in her career on articles. And so she seemed like the perfect choice to advise me on article research.
Oh yeah, it makes perfect sense. And do you know her, or did you know her before you came to for your PhD?
No, I did not. I came across her name when I was researching the literature. And she's from Serbia, and
right.
Croatia and Serbia used to be a part of the same country called yes. Yugoslavia. So when I saw her name, I thought, oh, she can't be Croatian, because I would have heard of her. And then I kind of wanted to see who she was. And then right. I found out she was at the University of York, and I really liked her research.
And she's alive.
And she's
yes,
alive.
And she's alive. Yes, exactly.
Well, to be fair, most researchers who've done research on articles are still alive.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's not that of an old field. But so, yeah, so I got in touch with her, and we had a Skype meeting and so on to discuss my ideas in the project. And that's how we officially met for the first time.
Oh, yes. It just like searching for the right soap part. Partner, isn't
exactly.
It? I know. It's pretty similar. You would be very impressed by how similar it is finding a.
It is like a marriage in some ways.
Yes. Well, we were saying the other day, like, we dedicate most of the time with my supervisor and the work rather than actually going out with my boyfriend or your
yeah.
husband in this case. Right. And so that's how you started looking at the subject that you are researching. And wow. And how are you going to do the research? Any specific methods that you're going to?
Yeah, so I'm using two different experiments. So on one hand, I'm interested in processing. So what happens in your brain if you read a sentence and you encounter a mistake in it, such as
right.
a missing article?
Mm.
So I have designed a study. There is a neat experiment which you can do where you have a computer program. And you have people read sentences, but you only let them see one word at a time.
Oh boy.
And the computer measures how quickly they go from one word to another.
Right.
And the idea is, if there is an error in the sentence, it will force the brain to slow down in just, you know, 100 milliseconds. It's very, very fast, but it'll force the brain to slow down to resolve the ambiguity. And
right.
the program picks up on that.
Okay.
And tells me whether there is a processing issue.
Yeah.
And the other part is, I also wanted to see, so this is in comprehension, when you're not engaging in production, and I also wanted to see how articles are used in production. So I also used an oral production task where participants have to retell me an animated film, the
right.
story of an animated film, and I record them and transcribe their utterances, their speech.
Right. Are you only working with non-native English speakers, or are you working with native and non-native speakers?
Yeah, so I have a control group which consists of native speakers, and then I have two groups of non-native speakers. One of them are Croatian and the other are Chinese.
Yes, yes, yes.
Which is interesting because both groups do not have articles. So
yes, yes, we do. We don't.
Yeah. And that type of studies have been very rarely done. Usually people compare a language that has articles, such as Spanish, against
yes.
an article-less language, such as Chinese.
Yes.
But we've actually never really seen what happens if you have two groups of participants who both don't have articles in their L1, what happens when they perform on the exact same tasks.
Sounds like Chinese and Croatian people, we speak very similar language structures.
Well, I'll let you know once I finish my data analysis.
Right. How long has the data collection been going on?
It's been going on for a while. So I finished the native speaker and Chinese data collection, and I still I've started Croatian data collection, but I still have to finish it. So I will go back to Croatia in June to do that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Right.
So almost done.
Right. Almost there.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. As soon as you have the data, you can actually write up and do
yeah.
things. From what you have collected now, are the data different from what you have expected?
To some extent. So I've analyzed the native speaker and the Chinese speaker data. And it's very interesting that, so you have two types of errors with articles. You can either omit the article, which means it's not there at all, or you can substitute it. So you can say, oh, this is a glass. Or you can say, this is the glass, and it's not necessarily always.
Yeah.
It is. So if you see the glass for the first time,
yes,
then you should say it is a glass. Mm. And sometimes non-native speakers will say this is the glass, where there is no reason to use a definite description or a referent. So it appears that in that self-paced reading task where I'm recording how fast you go from one word to another,
yes,
it appears that native speakers don't show any sensitivity to substitution errors, which is very unusual.
Yes.
But it could be down to several factors, and it could be down to the task itself, and it could be that the resolution of the error in their head is so quick that the program just doesn't pick it up.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I'm looking now into the reasons why this should be so.
So after you ask the like native speakers to read sentences and word by word, and do they notice there is an omission of the articles, or
well, the results suggest that when there is an omission, they notice it.
Right.
So there is a strong effect for substitution. I mean, sometimes after the task, they will tell. I mean, obviously, I don't only have article mistakes. You have something called filler items,
right?
Which you basically write similar sentences with various other errors that your participants cannot kind of catch on to what you're really researching,
right?
Because otherwise, they would just read and give you what you need them to.
Yes, yes.
So it wouldn't really be fair. So at the end, sometimes, especially native speakers, they'll tell me, I'm very surprised. Like, you do know that you have mistakes in there, do you?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah,
I do. That's on purpose. So they do
That's
notice.
What we do, yeah. Okay, right. Did you come up with this, like, design, or was it more of a discussion and looking through literature and discussion with supervisor, then you resulted in this particular design?
Well, all three.
Right.
SPR studies, or these self-paced reading studies, they are commonly used in second language research.
Yes.
So obviously I've had, you know, people done it before. And also, so the stimuli that I used for researching articles, I had to come up with myself from scratch.
Right.
But then the filler items, and I'm also researching a certain aspect of tenses that came from my TAP member's previous study, so
right,
Leah Roberts' study. So it's a mix of my own design plus her stimuli that I've adapted for my study.
Yeah.
So yeah, a bit of everything.
I know, yeah. If anybody's thinking about doing a second language acquisition, this is how you do it, basically. And so how are you, well, you said something about analysing your without, your results. You said there are significant differences. So you're running it through SPSS or statistic packages, I think, Machen?
Yeah, so I'm using SPSS at the moment. And for this particular experiment, I'm using a type of analysis called ANOVA.
Yes.
So yeah, that's what I'm doing at the moment.
Yeah. Right. Okay. You'll be surprised for a social scientist how many statistics and math we have to learn if you're.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know.
A lot.
I know. It's actually quite impressive how many things have changed over the years. Back then, we just read every script and see what this happens and this doesn't. But right. And any expectations or any conclusions that you think you're going to achieve through your research?
Well, I'm still kind of, I'm very cautious about making any kind of conclusions before I see the Croatian speaker data.
Yes, yes.
Because that could change whatever I'm thinking completely.
Oh, yeah.
But I think for me, one of the most kind of emerging findings is that I think research so far has tended to put substitution errors and omission errors into the same box. And
right.
I think the more recent body of research is showing that they are in fact more different than we think, which means that the brain deals with substitution of articles in a different way that it deals with omission.
Yes.
So that is probably one of the main findings that I would like to focus on.
Yeah, so you're sort of like contradicting what have been proposed in the field to an extent?
To some extent, yes. I think more recent research has been going along those lines, but I kind of also want to follow that path, I think.
Do you think that's going to, like, so far we're talking about theoretical theoretical understandings, and probably the listeners have no idea how this can be used. I don't have no idea how this can be used for teaching or learning or language users in the future. Do you have...
To be perfectly honest, I'm not really interested in how this affects language learners.
Right.
That was never kind of why I wanted to do this. I think I'm more interested in the bigger picture of how a second language or any language, as a matter of fact, is acquired.
Yes.
So I'm more interested in what's going on in the brain and what are the various processes that lead to a less or more successful acquisition of a foreign language.
Oh, yeah, I think. Yeah. It's quite common in second language acquisition when you do research and you involve brain or working memories. And people ask you, so what? How are you going to use this? We have absolutely no idea. It's just like, we don't know. Now we do. It's more like unveiling the unknown. I'd imagine that's the key part. So, right. And what's... So we're going to move on to a slightly more social side of the PhD life, and going to abandon this boring academic talks. And you've been doing this for on and off for about 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Right. So how what's the life of being a typical PhD like?
Well, I'm just going to speak for me personally.
Yes.
It's been very hard.
Right.
It is definitely... It's the hardest experience of my life, I would say, and it's been very challenging and rewarding, and it's taught me a lot, and it's expanded my brain in ways I never thought it would, but I don't think I would repeat it.
No. One given the chance. Enough. Yeah. Do not do another one. Yes. Right. And I understand. So I met Yelena when I first joined the department about three years ago. Actually, I met your husband first. He was the representative of the postgraduate students and PhD students at that point. And I thought, wow, he's very, very tall. And I met you. I'm like, oh, right. And his fiancée is very, very tall as well. So I thought, you got married last year. Congratulations, which is really, really nice. And so that's a very nice aspect of the PhD life.
Well, yeah, I think I'm one of those lucky people that didn't just come to get a PhD. I got husband as well on the way. So that was a really nice thing. I think I came on the first day into our induction of the first day of our PhD, and there was the only tall guy in the whole department, and he also spoke Croatian.
Oh yes, that's so very
so I was like, well, yeah,
where have just, you been?
Exactly. That's just meant to be.
I know, it's so meant to be. It's like kind of a departmental legend now, like the two tall people. And I remember when I first I went to one of the workshops you actually organized, then you said you're going to find the one person. I find someone that is so tall, and it's unexpected.
It's unexpected, and I think it's been a real blessing to have a partner who does a PhD as well. So we started at the same time, and we've been going through it together, and it's been kind of it's been giving me a lot of strength, and I hope to him as well, because you know, we very well understand what we're going through. We are very well aware of the kind of unscheduled and unusual lifestyle that you lead as a PhD student, and it just really helped us to get through it.
I think for people who are not actually doing a PhD or interested in being a researcher or academia, it's a very singular experience, I'd say.
Yeah.
For the past 3 years, nothing is like being doing a PhD. Do you feel stressed all the time?
Less so than I used to.
Right.
once the end is in sight, I think.
Yes, yes.
You're more joyful than you are stressed. I mean, overall, it is a stressful experience. I can't say I've been lucky with my supervisor in the sense that she, on the whole, doesn't tend to make me that stressed as some of my colleagues sometimes feel. So
yes, yes.
It's been okay. I do get stressed. I did get depressed several times throughout the PhD.
Everybody does.
But yeah, I mean, it's a really, really unusual experience and difficult experience. And I think it's unrealistic to expect that you won't get affected by it and that you won't get stressed.
Yes, yes. And there's nothing wrong about feeling stressed. Like literally everybody on campus,
yeah.
Especially now, they are feeling stressed. It's the exam season. So
absolutely. It's a normal emotion. And if it becomes too much, there are always techniques and ways that you can learn to deal with it, and I hope it helps people to know that yes, everybody gets stressed.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. don't think too much about it. Just get on with it and find help if you need to, and talk to someone and talk to a supervisor, most importantly.
Exactly. I think for PhD students that would be a very good piece of advice, to talk to your supervisor, because I think a lot of researchers are worried about their reputation and them being taken less seriously if they show that they're stressed or depressed. And I think that is kind of a stigma and a way of thinking we need to challenge. And I think talking to your supervisor and having an honest relationship is definitely step one.
I think so. And supervisors, they are human as well. You can just feel their mood changes when they are feeling stressed and burnout. Mm-hmm. And I think it's quid pro quo. If you treat them openly and communicate mm-hmm. everything you have in mind, they will do the same thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I understand you are the founder of Mind Your Head in York as well?
Yeah. So I was privileged enough to be able to found a mental health campaign called Mind Your Head. We've been in existence now for a year and a half. So not that long, but we've been very successful and have really had tremendous help from various students. And we have a lot of volunteers, which just shows you how prominent and important mental health is at the moment.
Yes, yes. It's actually one of the most important topics now in higher education, I think.
Absolutely.
It's, yes. Right. So what do you, what does the campaign do most of the time?
So one of our main goals is to promote understanding and knowledge about mental health and mental illness. And one of the major events that we run is the Mental Illness Awareness Week, which happens
yes.
in February at this university. It was something
yes.
we invented, and we have managed to get personal speakers and researchers from all over the country to come and talk about various mental illnesses.
Yes.
So we are hoping people will learn something new from those talks.
Yes, yes. I went to one of the talks and I was very... very good to know.
It's
very
I'm glad.
Good to know, because like when we talk about mental illness or your mental states, you feel a bit slightly embarrassed to talk about mm-hmm. it in open public. Now everybody talks about it, you feel much better,
mm-hmm.
and you recognize that, like, your colleagues and your peers, they are experiencing the same thing. It's not just you,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really, really important.
Well, absolutely. It's something we can't run away from. I mean, we have physical health and
yes.
we have physical illnesses, in the same way we have mental health and mental illnesses, and things do eventually go wrong.
Yes, yes.
Or from time to time do go wrong. And, you know, the same way we talk about physical health, why wouldn't we talk about mental health?
Exactly, exactly. And you can only drink so many days out of a week, I would say. You can't really drink yourself into oblivion and hope everything just passes by. No,
no, you should not do that.
No. We are not encouraging that. Drink tea, yes. And so are you more interested in being doing a future work in this campaign related
mm-hmm.
field, or are you more slightly focused on becoming a researcher in the future?
Well, a bit of both. So I would like to stay in research, and I would like to continue doing research, so all my knowledge and that I learned about statistics doesn't go to waste.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would ideally like to gear it more towards mental health research.
Yes, I think,
yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. That, because you for us, like, if you do a PhD for 3 or 4 years, it's really difficult to ditch that
mm-hmm.
and just work from a brand new perspective. You always hold on to it, but I did that for 3 years. I might as well get something out of it when you think about it. But I think it's very nice you find your true interest outside the academia, apart from articles.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm still passionate about articles, yes. And I'm still passionate about second language acquisition. I just think the way my brain probably functions is that I need to be involved in something that has more immediate applications.
Yes.
So, for example, my husband, he's a very... he's very British.
Right, yes, yes. We'll have him on the show on week 10, so you'll get to know him, how British he is.
He's very British in that wonderful sense that he is just very stoic and very persistent, and he can just work on things for hours and not get upset. And he doesn't necessarily have to see the benefit right there and then, and he'll still, you know, persevere. Whereas I'm, you know, Croatian people are slightly more temperamental, and I prefer to, you know, do things and see immediately effects and, you know, get on with it. And so I definitely think that mental health gives me that more than second language research.
3 years, then you see one article reported, published in one peer-reviewed journal, you'll be like, voila, there you go. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's hard work for doing a PhD.
I mean, it's a hard work, but I think it depends on your personality.
Yes, yes.
So definitely somebody who is as temperamental and quick as I am, you know, I need, let's say, a bigger turnover of
You should
of,
try knitting.
Of results. Knitting, yeah.
You should try knitting or weaving baskets.
If I ever get any spare time. Yeah.
We should sit together with our supervisor and start knitting all together. Probably everything will sort out. I know, it's very good. Somebody should start a knitting club society.
There is.
I'm going to join it right now. Right. So maybe last question. So have you got any word of advice for our listeners who are interested or any undergraduate students who are thinking about it? Pursuing a PhD career?
That's a very good question. I've been thinking about it. What would I say to someone apart from don't do a PhD? No, I'm joking. Yeah. You should do a PhD if you really want to do a PhD. I think something that I find common to a lot of my colleagues and myself is that when we all started our PhDs, you started in mind with the idea that you will somehow change the world and you will come up with this revolutionary study and show something new. And I think most PhD students very quickly realize that that's not what the PhD is for. And I think a lot of people do get depressed, probably in some respect, because of this realization. And the PhD, as my supervisor always reminds me, is an apprenticeship, and you're here to learn how to do research. So I would say, try to get do a topic and a study, design a study that will give you exactly that, an opportunity to learn how to do proper research. Don't be so worried about, you know, doing the most groundbreaking research. Be realistic. Also, if you don't have funding, be very realistic of access to equipment and time and participants, because a lot of those things cost money.
Yes.
So be realistic and take it as an apprenticeship and learn as much as you can. And then once you finish your PhD, you can conquer the world.
Yes, yes. It's like we said, it's a very singular experience. You don't you learn a lot. You grow up a lot during this past 3 years. For me personally, I think it changed how I look at things.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, you view the world differently after you've done a PhD. And not necessarily from more optimistic, but you do get changed. I think it's a very good journey to be on.
It is. It definitely is. It's hard, but I think it has a lot of benefits. And as long as you stay realistic and take from it as much as you can, I think it ends up being a very rewarding experience.
Are you recruiting any participants for your next stage of your research?
Yes, I've already recruited them. So there's just the job of going to Croatia and actually doing it. So
when are you leaving exactly?
In June.
Right, so you're going to be home.
Home in the hot, nice weather.
Summer, living England for a better place. And is your husband going with you as well?
He's for a part of it.
Right, very good. Yeah. Impressive. So for anyone who's out there who will be interested in going to Croatia or do a PhD research in articles and second language acquisition, you can find Jelena on our university webpage. Just search for Is it Jelena O'Reilly now?
No, it's actually still Jelena Horvatic. So right. It's H-O-R-V-A-T-I-C.
Right, you can find her on our website and join the Mind Your Head campaign.
Yes, and we have a website, so mindyourheadyorg.org, where you can find a lot of useful information. And we have a weekly blog where other students share their experiences of mental health and university life. So do check it out.
Yes, very good. Thank you very much for coming today. It's our first job, so thank you very much.
And thank you for having me.
Good luck with your PhD journey.
Thank you very much. Good.